Manx Radio's update with Beth Espy.
Well, Fastamai, good evening. Welcome to Update, where if you've missed the news today, fear not, we'll bring you up to speed in under half an hour. Tonight, we're going to bring you the headlines from the Chief Constable Russ Foster's latest annual report. The Health Minister will seek additional funding in Tynwald next month. We'll hear how much. Inflation on the island is up slightly, so what does that mean for you and your spending? And if you're preparing to put your best foot forward for the parish this Saturday, what is it going to be like weather-wise? The clue is you'll need sun cream and probably a brolly. We'll also keep an eye on the weather, the traffic and the travel as well. And if you'd like to get in touch, we'd love to hear from you. You can text the studio 166177 or email studio@manxradio.com. Let's start with the news headlines with Siobhan Fastamai.
Fastamai. The Health Minister will be seeking approval for an additional £15.3 million at next month's sitting of Tynwald to cover last year's overspend on health services. The supplementary vote has been tabled for July's sitting after it was blocked back in March. An inquest has been opened and adjourned into the death of a 14-year-old boy who was killed in Ramsey last month. Christopher McBurney from Castletown died on the 29th of May following a serious incident in Close Dreen. Another 14-year-old, who can't be named for legal reasons, has been charged with his murder. The Isle of Man's consumer inflation rate increased last month, with restaurants and hotels and alcoholic drinks and tobacco amongst the biggest risers. The rate at which prices are rising stands at 2.6%, up from 2.3% in April. It's been confirmed that by-elections will be held next month in Port Erin and Ramsey's South Ward. There are three people standing in each contest. Residents will be able to vote from 8am until 8pm on Thursday the 17th of July. Elsewhere, Douglas Council and Derby Commissioners will not be holding by-elections, as only one person in each area there has come forward. And Paris walkers are facing the possibility of hot and humid conditions, as well as a risk of some heavy showers during this year's event. Senior Meteorological Officer at Ronald's Way Met Office, Kirsty Pendlebury, is warning the forecast suggests the conditions could be uncomfortable.
I'm not convinced it's going to be the best conditions for everybody because it's still going to be quite warm. So daytime temperatures could be reaching up to around 22 degrees. And even overnight, if you're trying to go, you know, the whole route, temperatures possibly only dip into around about 14.
Further afield, I may not, is Donald Trump's answer to whether or not he'd join Israel in striking Iranian nuclear targets. 2033 was already a pushback deadline, but now HS2 has been delayed in the UK again. And a British man who was the only person to survive a plane crash in India last week has left hospital. They're your headlines. I'll be back with your news at 6.
Thank you very much indeed, Siobhan. Now, the weather brought to you by Manx Glass and Glazing, and it is going to stay dry with sunny intervals and light winds this evening. Temperatures down to 11 Celsius overnight, and tomorrow fine and dry, lengthy spells of warm sunshine, light easterly winds, maximum temperatures tomorrow 22. And then on Friday it will be quite cloudy at first, but those sunny spells will soon develop, light to moderate southeast winds, and it's going to be really warm, temperatures going up to 24 in the afternoon. Sunset this evening is at 9:54, sunrise tomorrow morning 4:44.
Manx Glass and Glazing can supply and install single, double and triple glazing. Call 674-573 or visit the showroom on the Snugbrook Trading Estate.
If you run a small business or just need more room in the back, Delshaw Vehicles has the perfect van or light commercial for all your needs and can sort out any finance. Based in the Tremode Estate, view delshawvehicles.im or call 49 51 49.
A great night's sleep got even better with Zed's Bedding Store. From quality Beldorm bed linen and mattress protectors, fleece and woven throws, to luxury duvets from the fine bedding company, Zed's Bedding Ramsey, next to Isle of Man Bank.
SMS Trading have moved to 3 St Paul's Square, Ramsey. For flat pack to fully built, new or second-hand furniture, SMS Trading offer all island delivery and man-in-a-van service. Call 315151 or find SMS Trading on Facebook.
At Pagode Cassery, we have been caring for animals for over 50 years. As a cassery, we care for customers' cats and treat them as our own. Contact Pagode Cattery on 676 947 or find Pagode Cattery on Facebook.
You're listening to Update here on Manx Radio FM. It's coming up to 5:05. An inquest has been opened and adjourned today into the death of a 14-year-old boy who was killed in Ramsey last month. Christopher McBurney from Castletown died on the 29th of May following an incident in Close Dreen. Amy Griffiths has the details.
In Douglas Courthouse today, Coroner of Inquest James Brooks opened Christopher's inquest. He noted that as criminal proceedings are currently ongoing into the circumstances of the schoolboy's death, he was required to adjourn the inquest while those take place. Another 14-year-old, who can't be named for legal reasons, has been accused of his murder. A pathologist's report confirmed Christopher had suffered multiple stab wounds, but had no other injuries or diseases that could have contributed to his death. A stab wound to the chest was found to be his medical cause of death. While further investigations are needed, the coroner was able to release Christopher's body to his family so they could make the necessary funeral arrangements. Mr. Brooks offered his profound condolences to the family, saying he can't express what they must be feeling. The inquest has been adjourned to a date to be fixed.
Amy Griffiths reporting. 6 minutes past five. Now, the Health Minister is going to be seeking approval for an additional £15.3 million at next month's sitting of Tynwald. And this is to cover last year's overspend on health services. This supplementary vote has been tabled for July's sitting after it was blocked in March, as Sean Cowper reports.
Claire Christian's motion confirms Manx Care's operational overspend for the 2024-25 financial year was £15.61 million, while the Department of Health and Social Care underspent by £370,000. A previous motion was put forward in March, but with the item having not completed the necessary 4 weeks on Tynwald's Register of Business, members chose not to debate the item. Some members expressed concern that the financial year had not yet been completed and the final figures were not known. The revised motion has been published 4 weeks ahead of July's sitting, ensuring the item will be moved next month. It states Manx Care identified cash savings of £11.8 million as part of its cost improvement plan, but employee costs, tertiary care and drug spend all increased over the 12-month period. The department previously estimated it would need up to £20 million to cover the overspend, but says specialist support and forecasting has reduced the monthly spend and mitigated additional risks. The DHSC previously forecast a larger underspend, but final quarter costs relating to the medical pay award of £2.3 million, improvement initiatives costing £1.19 million, and £130,000 spending on vaccines reduced its underspend to £370,000. Manx Care's total operational expenditure for the period was £362 million, with the healthcare provider having an approved budget of £347 million.
Sean Cowper reporting there. Coming up to 8 minutes past five. Now, police have recorded a 10% reduction in recorded crime on the island over the past year. It's the headline from Chief Constable Russ Foster's latest annual report. Lewis Foster, no relation, has been taking a look at the findings.
In the year 2024-25, 2,391 crimes were recorded and 2,047 arrests made. Most of those, 484, are listed as public disorder offences. The Chief Constable also boasts a 2% increase in the detection rate for crime finalised at 56%, meaning the suspect has been identified and the case considered detected. That's something which is exceptional, Mr. Foster says, compared to other forces in the UK and other similar jurisdictions. However, there's also been a 16% rise in domestic incidents and a 25% increase in the number of rapes reported. That's something the Minister for Home Affairs, Jane Paul Wilson, says is recognised, and it's taken as a positive that victims are coming forward to report such serious criminality. Meanwhile, Mr. Foster has been clear in his report of the challenges facing the constabulary in terms of staffing. In his open letter to the Minister, he says initial indications following positive changes in uplifting salary for new starters show promising signs for recruitment, which will hopefully be confirmed over the coming years. However, the issue of retention, he says, is a significant concern in the medium to longer term, as the constabulary predicts the retirement and resignation of officers over the next 3 years. A strategic intervention is required, he says. While the minister acknowledges this, saying there have been strides forward in recruitment, with the hiring of 16 new student officers, for example. Mrs. Paul Wilson ends by saying she looks forward to further working with the Chief Constable towards our shared vision of a safe and secure island. You can find a link to the full report at manxradio.com.
Lewis Foster reporting, and we have invited the Chief Constable for an interview, but he is not happy to do one until it's been debated in Tynwald. Coming up to 10 past five, people who are wholly or primarily self-employed will no longer be eligible for employed persons allowance if proposed regulations are approved by Tynwald at next month's sitting. Now, the Social Security benefit is income-related and paid to families and disabled workers who were employed for at least a minimum number of hours each week, as Siobhan Fletcher reports.
The number of required work hours depends on personal circumstances and children's ages, whilst the amount payable is based on family makeup, housing and childcare costs and income. Treasury says that whilst eligibility for employed individuals is based on verified earnings and hours worked, self-employed claims rely on reported profits, which are often unverifiable due to cash-based income and untracked hours. If approved, changes to the regulations will take effect from the 1st of September 2025, and no new self-employed claims for EPA will be accepted from that date. Existing claimants, around 50 individuals out of 950 people receiving EPA currently, will retain eligibility for up to 12 months. Treasury Minister Alex Allenson says Treasury is committed to providing financial support to workers in genuine need, whilst ensuring benefits are targeted, secure and reliable. He goes on, having considered a number of options, it's been concluded that EPA is not appropriate for the primarily self-employed. Officers are unable to verify the income or hours worked by claimants, and around 40% report earnings below the minimum wage, which raises questions about the sustainability of such businesses. He added that the Social Security team will work with those affected and the Employment Services team can help them find flexible work. For those intending to continue being self-employed, the Department for Enterprise can provide free-of-charge training and mentoring to help their businesses grow, with financial support available for eligible businesses.
Siobhan Fletcher with those details. 12 minutes past five here on Update. And as we've heard today, inflation on the Isle of Man has ticked up slightly. But what does that really mean for you and your weekly shop, your night out, your energy bills? Well, Christian is with me now and he's been poring over the latest figures with great delight, I'm sure. Fastamai, Christian, let's just start by going through the headline figures.
Fastamai, Beth. Yeah, the big number is 2.6%. That's how much prices have risen on average over the past year, according to the Consumer Prices Index. It's up slightly on April's figure by about 0.3%.
But 2.6% still sounds quite mild compared to what we've seen in recent years. Where are people actually feeling this then?
Yeah, so eating out is definitely costing more. The biggest rise was in restaurants and hotels, that category, which is up by almost 7% over the last year. And within that, catering, things like takeaways and pub meals, that jumped up by 7.8%. So if you've noticed a pricier bill when grabbing lunch or dinner, then you are not imagining it.
And what else has crept up?
Well, tobacco is another one. That's up by 7.5%. Alcohol also saw increases, though not quite as steep, and there were smaller but still noticeable rises in food and non-alcoholic drinks, just under 4%. So key ingredients like poultry and beef are also more expensive than this time last year.
I guess the big question is anything actually cheaper?
Yes, and this might surprise some people. Energy prices have fallen compared to a year ago. Gas is down by over 16% and oil by nearly 18%. Petrol's dropped too, by just under 10%. So while prices are still high overall, those reductions have helped keep inflation from rising even further.
So just to conclude then, Christian, what would you say is the key takeaway for those like me, who might not understand all the economics behind this?
Yeah, it's a bit of a difficult one, isn't it? It is a mixed bag. Some things like fuel and household goods have come down, but everyday costs like eating out or doing the weekly shop are still creeping up. Inflation's no longer surging like it did post-pandemic, but the pressure hasn't gone away entirely, because the way inflation works is the lower the figure, the slower the rate at which prices are rising. So yes, a lower figure for consumers is generally going to be better, but that doesn't mean prices aren't still rising.
Christian, thank you very much indeed. It's coming up to 5:15. Now, a geotechnical seabed survey is going to take place this week as part of development work for the proposed Moorvannon offshore wind farm. off the northeast coast of the island. Simon is with me and he has the updated information from Ørsted, which is the company behind the wind farm plans. Simon, what will the survey entail and when is it happening?
Well, Beth, is expected to take place over 6 to 8 days from the 20th of June. It will involve testing of areas of seabed to determine the geotechnical engineering properties of the soil. A total of 20 seafloor cone penetration tests, or CPTs, and 20 dissipation tests will be carried out. For the CPT, a small cone with a diameter of around 4 centimetres is pushed into the seabed to measure the resistance and friction of the different soil layers. Ørsted stresses that the impact on the seabed is minimal, affecting a very small localised area, with the seabed naturally settling back after the test is completed.
So who's carrying out these tests on behalf of Ørsted?
It's a company called GEO, which has expertise in conducting offshore surveys across the global energy industry, and they have worked with Ørsted on previous projects. GEO's survey vessel Connector will carry out the work.
So this sounds like it could be an expensive project, Simon. Who's paying and do we know what the cost is?
It's certainly not cheap, Beth. Ørsted, who will fund the work, says it's expected to cost around £2 million, which the company says will add to the significant capital sum the firm has already invested in the wind farm proposal, which, it must be stressed, is still subject to planning consent.
And finally, I assume the dates for the survey are weather dependent. We know it's going to be okay on Friday, but who knows after that?
They are, Beth. And after all, this is, of course, the Irish Sea we're dealing with. Marine traffic and harbour authorities have been informed of the plans in advance.
Simon, thank you very much indeed.
Manx Radio Travel, driven by Quayside Tyres and Service Centre.
Well, nothing to report on the police pages, which is always good news this afternoon. Just to look out for roadworks-wise, those temporary lights in Alexandra Drive as the junction with Woodlands Avenue, 24 hours a day for gasworks, are still there. And in Thalty Will, until Tuesday, it's going to be closed from the mountain to just below Sulby Reservoir. That's for patching works. The road will reopen at 3:30 on Friday for the weekend and close again on Monday morning at 9:30. All looking good down at the airport and at the steam packet as well this evening.
Ask how you can spread the cost interest-free at Quayside.
It's 17 minutes past five. Now, an MHK says the policy on living wage for migrant workers is absolutely bizarre, accusing government of creating a two-tier system. Now, from October, those seeking to come here on a working visa will be required to have a job that pays living wage. Government previously committed to match minimum wage with living wage by April this year, but didn't do so. Ramsey member Laurie Hooper does not accept that explanation.
I think it was a month or two ago in Tynwald. The government brings an amendment to the immigration rules that says, OK, but actually from the 1st of October, anyone moving to the island under a visa was going to need to be paid at least the living wage. So they've decided that we're not doing this for Manx workers because it's too difficult for businesses to pay, but we are going to do this for any foreigners coming here on a visa. That feels quite unfair to me. I think everyone should be paid a living wage, and I think you don't want to have a lower visa requirement than a minimum wage because you don't want to have people being undercut. But equally, what you don't want to do is tell people you can employ one person or another in this job, but if you employ a Manx person, it's going to be cheaper because you can pay them less. I don't think that's fair at all. So that's why I asked the government, what are you doing? Are you actually going to align the living wage for everybody with this new requirement, or are you going to create a two-tier system? And the answer was, they don't think they're connected at all. They're happy with the two-tier approach.
That's a Ramsey MHK, Laurie Hooper. But the Treasury Minister believes there's a misconception around this policy on wages for migrant workers. Dr. Alex Allinson says the rules will relate to migrants' annual salary, not hourly.
What we're talking about is the difference between a minimum annual salary, so what you earn over a year, and the minimum wage, which is what you earn in an hour. Now, in this country, we have a minimum wage, which is quite clearly set, and people can earn as much as they can in terms of how many hours they work. We've also got a minimum salary that people must be paid if they're going to move to this country on an immigration visa. And at the moment, it's remarkably low. It's about £20,000. And it's been so for quite some time. It hasn't gone up. In the UK, they've increased the minimum salary you must work as a skilled worker up to £38,000. So we're well out of kilter with the UK. So what we have proposed is to increase the minimum salary in stages to support yourself because you're not eligible to benefits. That doesn't mean that they will be paid more of an hourly wage for doing the same job. That's against the equalities law. So I think people have got the wrong end of the stick in terms of some of these conversations.
That's the Treasury Minister, Dr. Alex Allenson. And as ever, you can find out more about this story on our website. It's coming up to 20 past five, and a motion from Douglas East MHK Joni Farrago was approved in Tynwald yesterday, in which government agreed it should plan for the introduction of all age support and diagnosis pathways for ADHD and autism. Now, whilst Ms. Farrago's motion received plenty of support, there were some members who were keen to know how it would become a reality.
Calling the Honourable Member, Ms. Christian.
We know that many individuals, particularly adults, for which no diagnostic pathway currently exists for ADHD, struggle to access the support, treatment, or the care that they need. It is clear from the previous objective described in the 24-25 mandate to Manx Care and those contained within the National ASC Strategy Action Plan that the development of an accessible all-age support and diagnosis pathway is of clear importance.
The Honourable Member, Mr Thomas.
I'm excited by the enthusiasm from government for this motion. From a financing point of view, because a plain reading of what's on the paper is that this plan is going to come with the associated funding requirements for debate and vote. I will be supporting it, but we have to understand as well that that means other things can't be funded.
Calling the Honourable Member, Ms Edge.
Whilst I fully support diagnosis and pathways, we're being asked to vote on something that we agree with something, but we've no idea it could be costing us £10 million. We've no idea how many people are actually waiting for diagnosis. Whilst we're investing in this, we're not investing in our young people with ADHD pathways and CAMs.
Call on the mover to reply.
What I'm trying to say is that there will be cost benefits to this, so it isn't necessarily about saying we will have to deprioritise other services. Actually, that can't be the case if we're saying that there will be cost benefits to this. So I do need to try and make that clear to honourable members. To Ms Edge's comments around we might not be investing in young people or CAMs, that's not accurate if I can draw from both my time in the department and the answers to honourable members' questions from the current Minister for the Department of Health and Social Care. The children's pathway has been prioritised, actually, and is in place. CAMs do need further resource, but that's already in train and is partially addressed, actually.
That's the Douglas East MHK Joni Farrago. Before that, we heard Onken MHK Julie Edge, Douglas Central MHK Chris Thomas and the Health Minister Claire Christian. And as well as approving the motion, the court also agreed any plan for ADHD and autism pathways, along with funding requirements, should be brought to Tynwald on or before its sitting in February next year. Now, are you one of the almost 1,300 people preparing to take part in this year's Parish Walk? If you are, one of the big questions is going to be, what will the weather be like? Well, it's often said that the ideal forecast for the 85-mile event is neither too hot nor too cold, and with neither blistering sunshine nor heavy downpours. OK, you probably don't want to hear this then. Senior Met Officer at the Ronaldsway Met Office, Kirsty Pendlebury, warns it could be challenging conditions on Saturday.
I have to be honest, I'm not convinced it's going to be the best conditions for everybody because it's still going to be quite warm. So daytime temperatures could be reaching up to around 22 degrees. And even overnight, if you're trying to go, you know, the whole route, but temperatures possibly only dip into around about 14. So considering some of our temperatures have been maximums of around that recently, you know, very mild and humid night as well. On the whole, at the moment it looks like there's a fair amount of dry weather to be had with bright or sunny spells. Just a couple of the computer models are now starting to show the risk of maybe some heavier showers possible. So we're just keeping an eye on those as we get closer to the time. Obviously the nature of them, they're a little bit hit and miss as to where we'll see them and where we won't. So hopefully I'm largely missing them. But if you don't see any of those showers, it's going to be very warm, probably quite a lot of sunshine around as well. So I think it's definitely going to be one of those years to make sure you've got your sun hats and plenty of water and sunscreen with you for that one.
That is Senior Met Officer Kirsty Pendlebury. The first time I did the parish, Rob Pritchard, I did burn all down one side. Even though I'd put loads of sun cream on, I didn't factor in having to possibly reapply it. So fingers crossed it's not too hot for competitors on Saturday. You ever done it yet?
I haven't, no, but I can sympathise with that point, because covering it for Manx Radio a couple of years ago, I remember being out at Peel and it was scorching hot out there. And I was feeling tired and dehydrated by myself, let alone some of the walkers that were coming through. Glorious day, don't get me wrong. Great to see so many people out. But I didn't envy those walkers.
No. Well, registration for this year's parish opens shortly. And if you've entered, you can sign on for the event between 5.30 and 7.30 tonight and tomorrow at the NSC. And Rob will be doing it next year. But other sports stuff.
Elsewhere then, former Isle of Man Pro tennis player Billy Harris has been beaten in the opening round of this year's HSBC Championships. The former Albany and Castletown competitor was beaten in three sets by Canadian Gabriel Diallo, 6-1, 3-6, 6-4 at the Queen's Club last night. Harris was one of two British contenders to drop out at the first stage in the men's singles tournament. Fellow UK player Cameron Norrie exited the opening phase with a three-set loss to Miami Open champion Jakub Mensik on Monday. Elsewhere, three of Harris's British compatriots have all booked their place in the second round. Well, on Monday, Dan Evans stunned seventh seed Francis Tiafoe to win in straight sets, whilst Jacob Fernley beat qualifier Alex Bolt, also in straight sets, on what is Fernley's tournament debut. And yesterday, British number one Jack Draper opened his account with a straight sets win over the USA's Jenson Brooksby. In motorsport, TT rider Michael Rutter has returned home as he continues his recovery from a crash at this year's TT. The seven-time TT winner was injured in an incident at Dukes on the third lap of the Super Twin TT Race 2 on Friday the 6th of June. He was taken to Nobles Hospital and later transferred to the Walton Centre in Liverpool for treatment. Well, in an update on his social media channels, it's been confirmed the rider has now returned home and is getting some much-needed rest. The Bathams AJN Racing team is thanking everyone who's been part of Rutter's medical care, as well as supporters for what they say are their kind words and well wishes. And Isle of Man boxer and WBC champion Sam Rennie has found out who he'll face in his next fight in August. It's been confirmed he'll take on George Lamoli at Metro City in Northbridge in Australia on Friday the 29th of August in an international super featherweight contest. Well, former New Horizon Boxing Club member Rennie will come into this latest test off of the back of being crowned WBC Australasia Silver Super Featherweight Champion last month. Since turning professional in the sport, he currently has an undefeated record with victories in all four pro bouts to date. However, he faces an experienced figure in Lamoli, who has 15 career wins so far, 11 of which have been by way of knockout. The Indonesian's record also includes 12 defeats and one draw.
Rob, thank you very much indeed. And thank you for your company tonight. That is all from Update. You will be able to listen again, should you wish, as a podcast at maxradio.com shortly. Coming up next, it's Spotlight. That's supported by the Isle of Man Arts Council and brought to you by Howard Kane, taking a look at all things cultural here on the island. Then Chris Kinley has Greatest Hits from 6. Lots in that programme, so do stay tuned for him. From 9, it's Country Roads with Andy Yeehaw Wint. And then Dave will be here with After Hours from 10. Rob, don't look at me like that. Oh dear. We'll talk to you tomorrow.